everyone, and welcome into CrushTheStreet.com. I have a bombshell interview today, and I'm super honored to have Dale Bigtree on the show with me today of TheHighWire.com. He's an American television film producer and producer of the film Vaxxed, a great documentary on what is going on with vaccines, the agenda, the problems, the things that the media, the big tech giants don't want you to hear about. So I have him on the show with me today. I'm going to post this on YouTube. Hopefully it doesn't get banned, but if it does, it is what it is. I need to do what I feel is right. Dale Bigtree is on the line with me today. Dale, thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
So Dale, it surprises me when I did a Google search of your name. The first thing that pops up when I searched it was YouTube gives Dale Bigtree the boot about 4 years too late. I was just blown away by the bias. You know, what's going on with Google? I mean, this YouTube purge that's happening. And, you know, there's a certain argument to be made that a private company should be allowed to do what they want to do. But this is getting tied into government and agenda and control. And it just doesn't feel right, despite my, you know, beliefs in protecting the rights of businesses.
Yeah, I mean, this is a very complicated issue, right? I mean, for the most part, what's ironic is the people that are being censored off of these social media platforms tend to be, you know, libertarian leading. And the belief system of that is let business run itself, you know, total believers in constitution, a right to free speech. And YouTube has a right to free speech as a business, or at least that's where you would come from. But even what you said, when you look at Google, is Google really a private company? If that's the search engine that essentially everyone in the world is using, and they're building algorithms to only try and bring the worst perspective on to, you know, people like me, my Wikipedia. I can't even change my Wikipedia, right? This is supposed to be an open platform. They've written what they want to write. It's really ironic. I actually brought in some writers, said, can we try to focus on Wikipedia and write what truly is the work that I've done, that's like from a non-biased perspective, and maybe get all those people that support me to just constantly, you know, fight that battle to re-update it. And you know what? 24 hours later, there was a lock on Wikipedia, as though they were listening to us. I mean, these things are, you know, you can really start to get paranoid around this stuff. But, you know, we have a lawsuit because as you're pointing out, we lost our YouTube channel just about 2 months ago, the same week that the Frontline Doctor Summit happened in front of the Supreme Court. 17 million views on those doctors that came forward and said hydroxychloroquine's working. We have a solution. We can open up, you know, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter all took that down after 17 million views. The next day we lost our YouTube channel. So there is this purge going on. But the difficulty is, you know, what are we suing for? We're going to sue, but are we suing the company that has a right to say, hey, I just don't agree with your perspective? It's sort of like, you know, an apartment building. If you don't like, you know, live and do things in our apartment building that we don't like, we can kick you out. I mean, that's sort of where it's at. But I think the question really is, has it gone so far that it's now really, you know, a utility? Is it a public utility? It's sort of like if there's a toll road that's privately owned. They'll say you have a choice to use that toll road or not, but not once you buy up every road that there is. Now, if I can only go on toll roads, then these are now public utilities, and we've got to think about how we're going to deal with that. So it's a very complicated issue, and it's really unfortunate that these social media companies are taking advantage and using their bias to sway thinking and free speech now. It's going to be the problem in the future.
Is it that simple that it's just their bias and this is what they're trying to control? Or is it deeper than that? I mean, you know, we hear the stories of what happens when countries go extremely socialist or, you know, government top-down control. And obviously with what happened this year with COVID and the lockdowns and, you know, things that we've seen, our freedom stripped, it's kind of a rabbit hole, if you will. But I mean, do you have any instinct as to what this is leading towards?
Well, I think instinct is a good word. I mean, one of the things on the high wire I try to really do is stick to the facts and what I can prove. Right. But what you're asking me to do is to speculate into where it's going. And there's clearly in my mind, in my sense, and where I'm investigating, but I don't have the proof yet, is that we are moving into an agenda. Some, you know, this great reset they keep talking about. We keep catching politicians accidentally saying things like the New World Order. And I think we've got to take those little slip ups very, very seriously. Terms like Joe Biden using the dark winter. These are terms that exist, you know, not only in science, you know, in starting in science fiction, right? But we're also starting to hear it addressing the new world. You have, you know, Matt Hancock in England is joyfully talking about the fourth industrial revolution, this idea of consolidating all of our information into some form of trackable device, injection and a phone. They want to surveil us in every way possible, where our ID, real ID here in the United States of America, I think is something that's being implemented right now, where not only does it have all of your identification, but it will have your banking records and your medical records. So it's this idea of world control. And I think, you know, shrinking the, you know, disappearing the borders and moving into sort of a more of a UN-based world order, WHO. I mean, look how much now Google and YouTube, when they take you down, they'll say things like, you're not adhering to our public policies, or this is false information based on the WHO, that we follow the WHO. WHO is not an American company. That is a foreign body, as far as I'm concerned, especially since Donald Trump has stopped America's funding into it. Why is it an American company and a media platform that I use telling me that because of a foreign agency that my information about what's happening in America is incorrect? So I do think that we are seeing this pandemic used to roll out a total shift in the dynamic of the world. And they're telling us, right? They're telling us you're not going to get back to your life. Your life won't get returned to normal. Bill Gates, Tony Fauci, all these people saying until you get your adult vaccine. I predicted that, you know, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, if you watch talks I've been giving all over the country, I said pharma's going to attempt to take over the world. And that's what's happening. And now you have Google investing in pharmaceutical products. You have this really terrifying merger of the pharmaceutical industry with big tech. And that's just one of the combinations, right? Also banking, when all of those things come together, then we are in real trouble. That means that we have no power over those that are in control, and they have ultimate power over our bodies and everything that we do. And that's what I think is really going on here. They're taking away our right to communicate with each other, to be able to assemble and ask questions. In this world, assembly means getting together on a Facebook page and saying, do you agree with what our governor's doing in this state? It seems to me that this goes against our rights. And now they're taking down that Facebook page so that we can't have that conversation. It smacks of Nazi Germany or every other authoritarian control system we've seen throughout history. And it's happening in real time now. It's quite scary.
Yeah, you know, I'm kind of losing faith in when facts surface that anything good comes of it. And, you know, I was reminded of that with the Hunter Biden emails, the clear censorship that happened on a very conventional platform. I mean, this was mainstream knowledge. It was on the debate stage, you know, the New York Post censoring this. And I would instinctually think that this is going to surface. People are going to uproar about it. But then nothing really happens. And you go back to like the Hillary Clinton emails campaign and all of that that's going on. I mean, we can go down the rabbit hole of, you know, what's going on with pedophiles and all these different things. But I'm losing faith in anything good coming of the truth surfacing. That's kind of what's frustrating about this.
Yeah, well, we don't live in a world of free media or news anymore. And this is, I think it's really the biggest problem in America, is that we still walk around with this bravado. We've been pumped through our education system to believe that we're the greatest nation in the world and we're the bastion of freedom, when in many ways we are the most propagandized nation now in the world. You know, if you watch the High Wire, we are showing footage of 1 million people in Berlin not wearing masks arm in arm, letting police officers beat them with batons, but standing for their freedom. We're showing videos of London, England, over 100,000 people last weekend standing, marching, women, children, grandparents being beat with batons because they refused to wear a mask. You're not seeing that on CNN. You're not seeing it on MSNBC. I don't even think you're seeing it on Fox. We in America don't realize that we're really the only modern nation that is sitting down and taking this oppression of our rights. The rest of the world is saying, screw this. This is the end of freedom as we know it. Here, you know, what's supposed to be the shining light of liberty and freedom, we're locked in our basements, terrified of an imaginary virus, and not doing anything to fight for our rights as they enforce more and more insane draconian measures like California. You know, after taking away your church, taking away synagogues, now no Thanksgiving, you have to be in your backyard, you have to be 6 feet apart, and it can't be more than three families. I mean, at what point? I'm starting to ask myself, at what point do humans in the United States of America say, I've had enough, I'm standing up, this is crazy? I think that faith that you're having trouble with is, do we have it in us anymore? Do we have that DNA of rebellion that built this country? You know, what our founding fathers experienced under the oppression of the King of England, they finally said, no way. And here we are signing our names to the Declaration of Independence, come and get us. But we would rather, you know, die free than live, you know, under oppression on our knees. And that is the great question. And the way social media works and the ownership of our news now, you know, I was just talking to family members that are, you know, we're diametrically opposed now on what's taking place, but they don't even know anything about Hunter Biden. They don't know anything about, you know, they believe that this virus, I literally had a family member tell me yesterday that this virus, you can catch it, you know, multiple times. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Because there was maybe five cases where that might have happened out of 7.5 billion people. Are you designing your life out of a 1 in billion chance of being that weird human whose immune system's wrecked? Like, hey, there's a chance. I mean, it reminds me of Dumb and Dumber, right? When he's like talking to the girl saying, what's the chance you and I could hook up? She's like, 1 in a million. He's like, so you're saying I have a chance? I mean, this is how crazy the media has gotten. We are basing our lives and our decisions on absolutely outrageous anecdotal story points that are being beat into us over and over again as though it's commonplace. We are afraid of a disease with a 0.26% death rate. 99.74% of us have an immune system that destroys this virus and destroys it so well, nearly 80% of us need to get a test to know we have it or even had it, right? It's got the mildest symptoms of any virus we've ever seen. Yet you wouldn't know that if you're watching MSNBC or CNN. I mean, if you talk to Democrats, there's a deadly disease that's going to kill everybody. You talk to Republicans, they're like, I think we're going to be fine. How is that possible? How can we be living on the same planet, in the same country, in the same states, in the same cities, and have such totally diametrically different perspectives of the world that we are living in and the air that we're breathing? It is really, really shocking. And I guess in some ways, one of the great accomplishments of social media, that structuring of following our choice-making so that all we hear is that feedback loop that, you know, is handing us what we have been looking for. And now, you know, I mean, I think that's where we're at. And now social media is taking the next step saying, I don't care what you've been searching. Now we're going to decide what feedback loop you're going to be stuck in. And now you're just going to hear the same thing that we are going to present to you, just like the news has been doing. And that's the end, right? Now we're China. Now everything that every video screen we go to is essentially being driven by the industrial governmental, you know, power structure that wants us, is going to build the world and make us believe in a world that really doesn't exist, right? The news is no longer reporting on what's happening in the world. It's reporting on what world they want us to believe in. And that's been written virtually every dystopian novel since the dawn of man.
Yeah, I'd like to follow up with that. I mean, just as we're doing this interview, the stock market, Dow Jones is down 800 points. Because the surge, the headline, the surge in COVID cases, and the markets are scared about this. And, you know, I gotta ask you, I mean, in the beginning, I didn't know what it was. A lot of people didn't know what it was. In fact, I went along with this. Hey, let's the chips settle. We don't know what we're dealing with. I think the president felt the same way. Let's, you know, kind of see what we're dealing with here. But as time passed, we saw death rates collapse, models broken, and a lot of advancements in therapeutics, despite censorship. You know, have your thought, I'd like to ask you this, have your thoughts evolved from where we were right at the beginning of this pandemic and where you are now?
Yes, but I would say that evolution took about 2 to 3 weeks. And since then, if anyone's been watching the High Wire, I think we've predicted most of the things that proved to be true months later. But sure. You're right. When this thing first started, my first question is this a bioweapon, right? This is something that has always been a concern. It's why we have a vaccine program. It's why there's no liability on the industry in America, because we thought, you know what? Even though this may be a dangerous product, we'll pay for all the liability because we want these manufacturers to be ready in case we're ever attacked with a bioweapon. So that's not outside the realm of possibility. I'm not crazy. I believe in science. I know what's possible. I know what bad people can do in bad nations. I know, you know, we were starting to really overtake China in our you know, economic prowess in the world. And so, hey, they may not like that. Maybe they're releasing this virus. And I think it's still on the table that this may have been a, you know, manipulated lab creation. Maybe it escaped, maybe it's on purpose. But what you had to see very early on was the death rate just wasn't what we were being told. You know, it wasn't the 3% of all of humanity that was going to die. It became very clear, very fast, even in the worst hit areas like Italy, that we were seeing something in the neighborhood of 0.25%. And what Italy, you know, and what really hit me was when they said, yes, we have a lot of deaths in our elderly, but the truth is that at least 80, I think they said 88% of our deaths were really from the comorbidities, the heart disease, the cancer, the diabetes, that, you know, just because they died with COVID-19 doesn't mean they died from it. Italy was very honest about that up front. And we started looking, calculating the numbers and recognizing that that really was true. What we were doing was changing the way we counted things. But so looking at it from that perspective, and I've had my eyes on Sweden since the moment it became clear that they were not going to go with the rest of the world and lock down and mask everybody, that they were going to use some form of what we're now describing in this great Barrington Declaration that I think over 50,000 world-renowned scientists are now signing on to, saying, let's do a focused, you know, protection on those that are at high risk over the age of 65 with other comorbidities, but let everybody else catch this, because for the rest of us, this is the common cold. That way we get to herd immunity. So we've predicted all of those things. And so my perspective of this changed very early on, but what you're seeing is a massive manipulation through the media. I think hydroxychloroquine, there's just too many studies showing how successful it is. I've interviewed too many doctors on the front lines using it. Yet, because Donald Trump said he liked it, we saw a political football made out of this thing. And I think because of that, hundreds of thousands of people around the world have essentially been killed by being denied a treatment that really was extremely successful. That's just one of many, many stories. You know, I look at my children. I have a 6-year-old daughter and a 12-year-old son. We basically defected out of the private school that we had our children in last year and started a co-op. And we have a large group of families that said, there's no way our kids are gonna grow up in masks. We are not going to raise them believing in this insanity. And part of that decision was I was trying to imagine, especially my 12-year-old son, going to class with kids that are wearing masks, even if I said, you know what, he's old enough to know that this mask is ridiculous and go through it, but he's going to be trying to fight for my point of view, for his parents' point of view, that this doesn't exist, that there's no risk for children whatsoever, and he's going to have friends whose parents are terrified that their kids are going to die in school, even though in Switzerland and in Sweden and in Denmark, everywhere where they open up their schools, they're seeing that the transmission rate is not a big deal and no kids are really getting sick and teachers aren't getting sick. In fact, it looks like the kids create a herd immunity bubble around teachers. It's one of the safest places to be. But I thought about all the wars throughout time, those children that grow up that made it through, you know, my wife's stepfather, would talk about the bombing of Germany and, you know, by Hitler, and how the kids of that time in London, England, you know, grew up, that defined them. They'd all been through that together. The difference with this is we're all going through this experience, but there's going to be a really real division on who the enemy was and what really happened here. And I try to imagine, what is that society? My children know that this isn't real, that this is simply another, maybe a bad cold virus, but we found a treatment very early on. There's even more available now. We're seeing a lessening of the virus. I mean, and that's something we should probably talk about. But my kids are gonna understand the science of viruses. And they'll say, look, the virus took the course it should. I think the early lockdown was probably a good idea. It's always a good idea, really. Let's make sure we're aware of what this thing is. And the idea of flattening the curve so that even if it is only 0.25% is the death rate, let's not have them all hit the ER at the exact same time. So that made sense. But once we found our ground, once we never used one of those tents that was put up by the army or the ship parked outside of New York City, once we recognize this thing is just, even at its height, is not going past our capacity of our hospitals, then we should have started shifting into, okay, now we know how to deal with this. Once we recognized it was ventilators that was killing people more than the virus itself, that if we actually gave people oxygen and maybe an inhaled steroid like budesonide, and there's all sorts of steroids being used in different hospitals around the country. Either way, what you're talking about is, yes, we are seeing a rise in cases. What we have is a case-demic, but we're seeing a crash, a dive of the death rate. That's exactly what you scientifically and medically want to see. That means there's a couple of things going on. We're probably treating this much better than we did in the beginning. We have a better understanding of what it is. Can't imagine where we'd be, right? If you were actually allowed to use hydroxychloroquine. But also that viruses naturally mutate to become less and less deadly. That's, if you think about evolution, if they're in a host and they kill the host, the virus dies. It doesn't want to die. It wants to procreate, wants to keep moving on. So it's natural that it would become less and less virulent in a way that it doesn't kill its host. That may be what we're seeing too. So either way, now we can reach herd immunity easier with a much lower death rate. And that's where we should be opening up and saying, okay, it's safe to come out now, at least for everybody under the age of 65 that doesn't have some comorbidity. And yet we're not even being allowed to do that. And that's where this thing is just getting more and more insane.
Yeah, and I guess to the point of the lockdowns being a positive thing, all the mistreatment at the beginning, you know, it's so sad to think about people spreading this virus and then going to the hospital. I think that's what I don't want to deal with. I don't want to have an issue and get the virus and then be mistreated. That's my fear, or family and friends that I care about, which kind of is an odd dynamic to have to worry about and trust the doctors, the CDC, the WHO. You've mentioned President Trump, and he does seem very open-minded, very centrist when I listen to him. I mean, he's just, hey, let's see how this plays out, the therapeutics. And, you know, the conventional wisdom does not want to endorse the therapeutics. They seem to be only focused on the vaccine. And even Trump has, I think he understands that. He's open to the idea that the market wants the vaccine to get things going again. You know, they want the vaccine, but at the same time, he's like, hey, you know, I was basically cured with what they gave me in the hospitals, and conventional media is acting like he had some sort of magic potion that isn't available to anyone else. So, you know, maybe some thoughts on that. Have you talked to Trump, by the way, about the vaccine, or tried to reach out to him?
I wish I could. You know, I would say that we're getting closer and closer. I'm talking to people that do talk to Trump, and that's about as much as I can say about that. I'm not going to tell people how to vote. You know, I have a nonprofit that helps support the work that I do. All that we talk about is that, you know, we are a medical investigation nonprofit. We, you know, our mission statement is dedicated to eradicating man-made disease. But I can speak to what we have seen, what we know that, you know, these different candidates have said. And you're right, Donald Trump, I think he's the type of person that appears to me to be trying to be there for everybody, right? He wants to be everybody's president. So basically saying, you want vaccines? I've funded more money into vaccine production than any world leader in the history of this planet. The United States of America has poured billions of dollars into trying to fast track a vaccine for COVID-19. He's also poured millions of dollars into treatments. I'm not sure that it's billions, and I would like to see treatments getting the same amount of money, but he has definitely funded treatments. He's even said, I personally prefer treatments over vaccines, but you can have whatever you want. When he's been asked point blank several times, will you mandate a vaccine? He said, no, I think that there are people that have really strong feelings about that, and that's their right. And so I think, you know, that's what we know. Whereas, you know, Joe Biden, Kamala Harris have come out against the vaccine if it's coming under the Trump presidency, which is really weird. I mean, to me, that's like, so you think it's possible for science to have a bias? Welcome to my team. That's what I think too. And guess what? I wouldn't trust a vaccine by Donald Trump or Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. I know how they're made. I know that the pharmaceutical industry has real conflicts of interest and a real agenda to make it vaccines over, you know, treatments. And so let's be really clear about that. There's several things that I find extremely troubling about, you know, this vaccine. Besides the fact that it's one of the most dangerous vaccines ever attempted, they've been trying for 20 years and only been having terrible results in animal models, cytokine storm, immune system meltdowns in the animals, and then death, organ failure. That's the history of this vaccine. So to be rushing that vaccine with that track record is very dangerous. But when people say why treatments, you know, or why, you know, vaccines, we have been told from the beginning by Tony Fauci very early on, the only way to end this will be with a vaccine. How does he know that? Because you could easily end this if you had a good treatment, right? It's sort of like when we had rickets in London, England, and everyone's got these bowed legs and say, you know what? All you have to do is go stand out in the sunshine. Vitamin D, it actually turns out this is just a vitamin D deficiency. Boom, never needed a vaccine, cured it overnight. How do we know that there's not some treatment like that that just absolutely wipes this thing out? We don't. Right? Yet all of the scientists that are driving this lockdown and driving the masks are telling us we're predicting into the future that it's only going to be vaccines. That tells you that there's an agenda involved. But let's look at the pharmaceutical industry. It's a really, in some ways, it's just a really smart business decision for them to be more focused on vaccines than treatments. And here's why. The death rate of COVID-19 is 0.25%. So if you find a treatment that saves that 0.25%, so that 100% of people are going to live through this, then you have a product that is going to be sold to 0.25% of the population. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of money, a few million dollars. I mean, it sounds good to some people, but now let's say, but hold on a second. If we never find a treatment, or if every treatment we find, we bury it and hide it, and we say, no, a vaccine is the way forward. See, the difference between a vaccine and a treatment is given to those that are in harm's way. A vaccine is given to everybody else to protect that 0.25%. So if you have a business where you're going to sell a product that is going to be forced upon the world, do you want to make a product that is sold to 0.25% of the 7.5 billion people? Or do you want a product that's given to the 99.74% of healthy people that don't need it at all in order to protect that 0.25%? You were talking about the difference of a 99.74% larger profit than if you sold treatments. And that's what this is all about. A treatment makes the most sense with this, but it's not going to make pharma hundreds of billions, if not trillions of dollars. It's going to make a few million dollars. And that's what this is about. We are all caught in a giant money scheme and an agenda to be forcibly injecting every human being on the planet, not just with the COVID-19 vaccine, but the 270 vaccines that were just approved over the last year that no one knows about, and the thousands of vaccines that are in trials as we speak. The future of pharma and the future control of the world and our bodies is the right for them to inject us with products we have no control over, driven by the government. And that's where I've been saying pharma is the most powerful lobby in Washington, folks. They're outspending oil and gas 2-1. We fight wars in the Middle East. What do you think pharma is getting when they're spending twice what oil and gas is spending to fight wars in the Middle East for their product? They're getting you. They're getting your body. And I can only say to anybody that still has blood pumping through your brain, if you believe in vaccines, fine. If you don't believe in vaccines, fine. We should all be in agreement that you never give the government power to inject your body with products you don't have any control over. And let me be very specific to those people that hate Donald Trump with a passion. I lived in California. I fled California. And I would say, hey, in California, they think Donald Trump hates Black people. They think he doesn't want to see Mexicans or Spanish people in America. They think he hates gays, bis, lesbians, transgender, so much that they think that he would kill them if he could. And yet those are the same group of people that support a forced vaccination program on humanity, that want to see all the ability to have exemptions so that you can opt out of it taken away. I have news for all of you folks that believe that Donald Trump is that Hitler. That Hitler in your mind is the one holding the syringe that you're going to be injected with, folks. When you take away your right to opt out, let me be perfectly clear. The president of the United States elects the head of Health and Human Services, the head of FDA, the head of CDC, the head of the National Institute of Health, not you. And so if there's an agenda to wipe a race, a religion, a creed off of this planet, if we ever do hire a bad actor, and let me be clear, I don't believe Donald Trump is that person, but there are people that do have that belief, yet they're not protecting themselves from the results of what would happen if America did that. I think we have to accept that it is always possible to accidentally elect a Hitler, that they could somehow manipulate the press or manipulate the people and get stupid people to vote in large numbers. And then to give that person, that bad actor, control over the human body that you should be in control over and your children. If that president doesn't like who you are, he puts into place everybody that is mixing up what is in that needle that is going to be injected into you. Please think twice about ever giving up your right to body autonomy and control over what goes into your body. If you do give that up, then you cannot call yourself a free human being anymore. You just became a farm animal. I believe it's worse than slavery. You are as bad as a cow or a goat stuck in a field. When the farmer decides to inject you with whatever steroid or sterilize that bull because they've just got too many of them, don't eat them around, or even make them drop dead, it's all possible once you've given up the power over your own body.
It's so compelling, Del. And I'd like to pose this to you as well. If someone tells me they have a headache, I might offer them an Advil. And they might tell me, I'm not into taking pills and, you know, I'm just going to deal with it and move. And I'm not going to think anything of it. In fact, I know what they're thinking. They're saying, I don't want to get dependent on some drug and other side effects. I'd rather just deal with it. It's not controversial. It's, in fact, most people don't consider that controversial. But of course, you apply that to vaccines and it's a political, religious, very passionate debate. Like, you don't believe in science. And I guess having everything you just said, you know, regarding the incentives for these pharmaceutical companies, you know, is there any middle ground truth to vaccines being positive? I mean, anything to point towards to say, you know, maybe they've done some good, maybe some vaccines are better than others. I mean, is there anything that we can do to bridge this gap between, you know, where pharmaceuticals are and, you know, where all the facts that you're pointing out is?
I think if you imagine living in a dirty time with smallpox, where we had, and you know, diphtheria, had the vaccines come around when our children were playing in the streets and there was horse manure and even manure from the houses because the plumbing wasn't correct and our water systems were foul and dirty like we see, you know, in places in India and Africa. Under those circumstances, before you clean up, before the toilet is invented, or before there's enough sanitation so that you are not bathing in feces and, you know, and excrement, then perhaps a vaccine could be of value. I will never say, you know, that, you know, I'm interested in the use of vaccines. I would prefer we go to Africa and India and these third world countries and give them sanitation. But if that's too expensive, maybe in that position, a vaccine is the best you can do, because they live in squalor and bacteria and viruses are running rampant and their immune systems are so incapable because they're compromised all the time. That would be the place that perhaps a vaccine, if there is this place that it has value, that would be it.
So you're saying there is some efficacy, though. I mean, just to point that out. I mean, there is some efficacy. It's just on the spectrum.
There is waning. It is. And here's the point, right? Does a Pinto drive down the road? Sure, it gets down the road. Can it blow up? You know, when I think about those old ones that blow up when they get hit from behind? Yeah, I mean, there did seem to be some issues. Can you race a Pinto against a Ferrari? Ferrari's going to win every time. And so the problem is this is really, the analogy I'm making is vaccines are an inferior immunity. They have never, ever made a vaccine that is as capable as having gotten the illness yourself, like the natural wild illness. Measles, when you caught it as a kid, you have lifelong immunity until you're 105 and die. You have such good immunity when you have measles. For a girl that gets measles at 4 years old, when she is 25 and having her first baby, that immunity was passed on to her baby for the first year and a half of that baby's life. And then if she breastfed, that baby was immune to measles for 2 to 3 years of its life, all the way through all of the dangerous times for the human body. The dangerous time for measles is to either get it as an infant or to get it as an elderly person. And so the way nature worked was the mothers passing it on to the babies, and then we're all immune for life. Vaccines came along, okay, and they have an inferior immunity. They've never established cellular immunity. There's two parts to immunity. There's the antibody production we hear about all the time. The only reason we hear about that all the time is because that's all the vaccine's ever been able to do. It's never been able to get the Th2 response, or the cellular immune system. That is the memory that stays in your cells forever. Now they're attempting, they're going to try, of course, to figure out how to do that, but no vaccine ever has. That's why you're getting a measles vaccine twice before the age of 18. Now they're talking about a third MMR vaccine in college. And if you go to the CDC website and look up adult vaccine program, you'll see that there's two more MMRs as adults. And one of the big problems is the measles outbreaks that are happening around the world, though it's being blamed on anti-vaxxers, it's not true. What really needs to be blamed is the failing of the MMR program. Half of the cases are adults in all of these outbreaks. That means people that were vaccinated are now getting it again, so they need to be vaccinated over and over and over again. Meanwhile, so when we talk about that immunity that the mother passed on to the babies, that doesn't exist anymore on the planet, because vaccine immunity never held. It's not lifelong. And the mother, even if you inject the mother with an MMR vaccine a week before she's pregnant, she will pass on no immunity to her babies. And so now every baby being born is susceptible to measles because of the vaccine program. You see, the vaccine says that it eradicated the disease. The only thing it eradicated was herd immunity. Herd immunity can only be achieved if everyone that gets the virus, it has lifelong immunity, now stands as a pillar, you know, against the penetration of the virus into the community. No vaccine can achieve that. And so that is the great problem that we now see. And so now you're seeing a recurrence of polio in third world nations. Why? Because the vaccine is causing polio. It's called vaccine-derived polio. The only cases in the world, and they're now spreading, is coming from the vaccine. There are all sorts of issues with the vaccine program now that no one knows about. I do, because I'm going to meetings at the CDC. I'm reading all the literature, and my science team is investigating everything about vaccines. This is a serious, serious issue. And I've played videos from the WHO meeting last December that was designed to figure out how to stop vaccine hesitancy. And what Heidi Larson, one of the top scientists in that group, said is, we have made the world dependent upon vaccines for their immunity. And they don't know that. And we did that based on the idea that they would keep getting every vaccine that we hand them. But now they're starting to question this program. And she basically said, we can't allow that to happen. You see, this is what people don't know. They've taken away our natural herd immunity, which was successful, which if you look at the graphs, the mortality of measles was at zero. It had gone from a 90% mortality down to zero before the vaccine ever arrived. Mm-hmm. All they did was take away that great natural immunity we'd all developed and replaced it with an inferior immunity. And so here's what I have to say. Go ahead. If you want to buy the Pinto and you want to take it in the shop and you want to get the next and you got to get 5 or 6 Pintos to get through, fine. I want the Tesla. I want the Ferrari. I want the winning vehicle. I want that the Ferrari of immunity, which is catching a trivial childhood illness naturally. That's what I want for my children. And then instead of ridiculing me and my children, why don't you thank us for being the true pillars of herd immunity that are going to stand and protect you our entire lives, because your vaccinated children, it's waning and wearing off all the time. And all you're doing is helping the virus become more and more powerful and more virulent and more dangerous because of the vaccine. Just like antibiotics are done with bacteria, that's what these vaccines are doing for the viruses. You should be thanking us, those of us that have children that are naturally immune to these diseases, because we're protecting you.
Yeah, it's the same thing with the masks. You're wearing the mask to save the other person, and they do the same thing with the vaccine. You're harming other people by not getting the vaccine, and that's the that's the narrative. So last question, Del. That pertains to these vaccines, you know, so many things, so many ingredients that are questionable. I know this is something that's being discussed as an issue in that they're using aborted fetuses, you know, in the DNA in these vaccines. And I wanted to bring that up and ask you about this, what your research has said, aside from the moral issue. I mean, obviously there's a moral component to this. People are saying that this is an issue, you know, injecting someone else's DNA into your body. And, you know, I guess the average person might say, well, I mean, I eat cow, I eat other animals, you know, I'm putting other DNAs into my body. Why is it any different if I get it in a vaccine? Is there a real implication to injecting DNA from a vaccine that's actually material?
Yes. In fact, there's been studies done on this and scientific studies, one by Dr. Teresa Deister, who's one of the world-renowned stem cell scientists in the world. She discovered the adult heart stem cell when everybody was looking at the aborted fetal stem cell lines for science. She said, no, those are dangerous cells because they haven't been trained. It's a very unique concept, but she says they will just proliferate and therefore they'll cause cancer. Whereas if you use stem cells from adults, and now with all of the harvesting of our own stem cells, many of the treatments, which has been the most successful stem cell treatments there are, is when we harvest them ourselves or from adults. That's Dr. Teresa Deister. So we're talking about a very, very serious scientist. She did a study injecting the MMR vaccine into petri dishes with stem cells. And here's what she has discovered. That, first of all, when we made the vaccine, so people understand, you're using cell lines from aborted fetuses, usually lung fibroblasts, so lung cells. And they keep these cells alive. And in abortions that are being done for future research, the baby has to be born alive. The cells have to be taken. They have to be living cells. They can't be dead. And so you are taking a baby, you know, burying it alive and then cutting the pieces out of it that you're going to use to grow. It's the medium. It's what we grow the virus on. Well, once we grow the virus on these living human cells and we extract them to put them into the vaccine, you cannot take away the DNA. You can't take, it's in a part of the virus. And they knew this. And so they basically run it through, you know, if you imagine a blender, they chop these long DNA strands into tiny little fragments, because they never did any science to say, would it be safe to inject foreign DNA into our bloodstream where it could, you know, travel through our body and affect cells, perhaps mutate cells. So they thought, well, let's just chop into little pieces. That will probably help. What Dr. Teresa Deischer's studies have shown is maybe had we left full length, you know, DNA strands, we wouldn't have a problem because the cell wouldn't absorb a whole strand. But because it's just a little tiny snippet, a little piece. Now think about this. This is what stem cell therapy has been working on. This is what gene therapy, right? Scientists for decades now have been trying to cure cancer by going after what they know is the genetic code that causes cancer. Take that out and just insert, you know, a little fix, a little piece of code. Well, why aren't we seeing that being done even after decades of research? Because if it slips, if it misses, or if it's absorbed by the wrong part of the strand, it immediately causes cancer. Cancer is a huge problem in gene therapy. You can ask any scientist that's deeply involved in it. And Teresa Deischer showed that the problem is these little fragments, they're being taken up by our stem cells. Now, had it just been our regular cells, right? Had the regular cell just bumped up against these little floating fragments and the cell mutates itself, not a problem. You've got billions of cells throughout your body. What she has shown and what's miraculous is for some reason, when these fragments are floating through the body, it's not going into the cells and mutating a single cell. The stem cells are going out of their way and grabbing them and mutating themselves, mutating the stem cell. The stem cell is your cell factory. Once it has taken up this little piece of genetic, foreign genetic code and mutated its own DNA, it starts replicating that to create those cells through your whole body. Now you have a mutation in your body that can lead to all sorts of issues. Her original science was looking at childhood leukemia, but she believes that autoimmune disease is inevitable and neurological disorders. So that is what we now know scientifically is happening, and it makes perfect sense. Teresa Deischer spoke with one of the world's leading gene therapists that was working on that science we talked about with gene insertion, and she said, what if I told you we inject children with DNA fragments? The gene scientist said to me, oh, that'd be great. We would never do that. She's like, really, why? So, because you would have high rates of childhood leukemia and autoimmune disease, it would be outrageous. And she said, well, we're doing that. And we do have the, you know, skyrocketing rates of childhood leukemia, autoimmune disease. He's like, no, we don't. She said, let me show you. Let me show you the MMR vaccine. And this is, there are floating fragments of DNA. And he stopped talking to her. He's like, I don't even want to be near that. I mean, that's how tragic this whole thing is. People think the science is being shared amongst everybody. No gene therapist would do what we're doing with vaccines. They would know. They know how totally dangerous it is. These are the types of things that we're trying to alert the world. And now some of these COVID-19 vaccines are being, you know, grown on aborted fetal DNA. And we have no idea what sort of calamity is going to happen. Remember, we have autoimmune disease has skyrocketed, and so has neurological disorders. We went from when we got 11 vaccines. I was born in 1970. Anyone born before 1986 got about 11 vaccines by the time you were 18. After that, we took away all liability with the 1986 Vaccine Injury Compensation Act, and our vaccine program is currently about 54 vaccines in the United States of America. And remember, like DTaP has three different elements, diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis, acellular pertussis. So we're actually getting about 72 doses injected into us by the time we're 18. In that same time period, if you look at the graph, we went from 11 vaccines to 54 vaccines. When we had 11 vaccines, the chronic illness rate in our children, meaning lifelong permanent disability of either an autoimmune disease or a neurological disorder, that chronic illness rate was 12.8% of our children. Just back in the 1980s, 12.8% of them had chronic illness. Now, fast forward to 2020. So just over 30 years later, 54% of America's children now have a chronic illness, either a lifelong autoimmune disease or a lifelong neurological disorder. That is the greatest decline in human health in recorded history. And it sits coterminously watching the increase of the vaccine program. And it makes sense, really, if you look at it. Autoimmune disease means your immune system is confused. It's now attacking your body, not protecting your body. It's attacking the cells in your own body. It would stand to reason that if we have gone from tricking the immune system with a vaccine, if you ask a scientist how it works, well, we basically tricked the immune system into thinking it's had a disease it didn't have. It went up against a part of a dead virus and created all the antibodies. Well, we're not just tricking that immune system one times or 11 times like we did in the 1980s. We're not doing it 20 times, not 40 times, 54 times. We are tricking the immune system of our children. And lo and behold, that immune system has now gone haywire and is attacking the pancreas or is attacking our myelin sheath or is attacking our gut lining. all of these issues from lupus to Crohn's disease to asthma and skin issues and diabetes, all running rampant in our children. 54% of our kids are sick. The sickest nation of children in the industrialized world, and we give more vaccines than anybody. We have more babies die on the first day of life than every other industrialized nation combined. We have more babies die in the first year of life than the 20 other richest nations in the world. In the United States of America, we have more women die during pregnancy than the 20 other richest nations in the world. We're the only ones that are giving flu shots and DTaP vaccines while women are pregnant. And it's now reported that you're 70% more likely to die before reaching the age of 18 in the United States of America than if you grew up in the 20 other richest nations in the world. With those stats, we should stop holding our doctors on a pedestal. We should stop looking up to Tony Fauci and the CDC and the FDA and the WHO. Those organizations that are supposed to be protecting us have overseen the greatest decline in public health in world history.
Dell, I pray that your message continues to go viral despite the censorship. We'll do what we can here. I went to your website, thehighwire.com. I'm going to make a donation. You got a link to your nonprofit, Informed Consent Action Network there. I encourage people to go there. I hope you get through to Trump. Man, I hope you get on the Joe Rogan podcast. I mean, my goodness, he's really having some deep conversations with people and reaching the mainstream. I mean, seeing someone like that who really was a liberal in so many ways, but having some of these awakening moments, questioning the mainstream, it gives me some sense
amazing.
Of hope.
And if people bother Joe Rogan because we've reached out. He still is not shed enough of his liberal values to go near this topic. I do believe that Joe Rogan, in fact, I think Joe Rogan should host the debate. He should host, you know, two or three of the top pro-vaccine scientists of the world up against, you know, two or three of our representative scientists, and I'll even be a part of that debate. They should be able to win that debate if they're right. And I think Joe Rogan would be the perfect person to host that, but right now he's too afraid of the topic. So we have found the one issue that Joe Rogan won't go near. So if people want to reach out to him and try and inspire him to the most important conversation the world is ever going to have, especially in light of a dangerous COVID-19 vaccine that has potential to set us up for death, and maybe forced on all of us within the next year. I'd be a really good time, Joe, if you're out there. Yeah. We're ready for that conversation.
Dell Bigtree, everyone. Dell, thanks for coming on the show with me today.
Thank you for having me. Keep up the good work. Talk to you soon.